God gets to talk when he wants to. Right. That's the biggest thing we're going to get to about this stuff we're talking about here. We got to learn to listen. You know, so many of us have somehow or another been caught up in the Protestant thing where you just sit and talk and pray. Got a great prayer life. I sat there and my mouth moved for 10 minutes. Well, big deal. When did God get a chance to get a word in? What's going on? That's a huge difference. I mean, if you're like me, you grew up watching adults behaving like I was talking about. With that, so yeah. Right. We're going to get to that too here. So anyway, we've asked God that our thinking be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. There it is again, huh? We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. I think Carrie's still talking while we're still sitting in our planning time. We're just dealing with our confusion, and we're just trying to plan.
One of the disservices in Alcoholics Anonymous is that these sponsors that absolutely insist on directing everything you do. See, the book just said, for after all, God gave us brains to use. And someone's going, well, your very best thinking got you here. Yeah, but it's a half-truth. The rest of it is, if you're going to teach people to rely upon you as a sponsor, they'll never become reliant upon God. Our reliance is supposed to be on God. I'll tell you something my sponsor did to me that I didn't catch on to for 3 years, which shows you how bright I am. It just, we would have these talks, I'd call them up to 10 step, but I was really calling them up to help me make a decision. And I'd say, well, this going on, what do you think? And I wanted him to say, well, under these circumstances, you would do this. And he never, ever did that. We'd have like 30-minute conversations, and he'd go, well, you ought to pray about it and do what you think. And I'd go, oh, okay. So I'd pray about it and do what I'd think, and then I'd call him up again. And it took me 3 years to figure out that the last sentence in every conversation I had with him was, why don't you pray about it and do what you think? See, and what he was doing was he was making me God-reliant instead of Don-reliant. And he kept turning me back to using my intuition. When people call you up and say, what should I do? You know, we want to say, well, in my experience, you know, I would do this, this, and this. It's exactly the wrong thing to do. Always get people to turn back towards God. And acting like someone's absolutely stupid because they wound up in Alcoholics Anonymous is a disservice. We're not stupid people. We're drunks. It doesn't mean that we don't have any intellect. It just means that we have alcoholism. You know, some of the brightest people I've ever met are in Alcoholics Anonymous. So don't keep beating somebody over the head with the fact that they wound up here because they're stupid. That just isn't true. And having them learning to make good decisions over time is extremely important, and building their intuition by having them pray about it and do what they think is a really good thing to do with people that you're working with. So, sorry.
I'll get a call from people once in a while, and they'll go through this long litany of their current dilemma. And so when they're done talking, I'll say, well, what are you going to do? But it takes a little practice, because that too, you're fighting your ego, because you want to give them the answer, but it doesn't work. Let me go on here. Where did I stop? Wrong motive. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch of the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. I got to tell you that on the flying out here Friday, when I had about an hour and a half delay, layover in Dallas, and so I'm looking at all the messages I got on a cell phone when I got there, and one of them is a guy I've worked with and known for a long time out of Casper, Wyoming, and a good guy, but he's in Portland, Oregon, trying to help his daughter, and his daughter's not an alcoholic, but she was in real trouble emotionally. And he didn't know anybody out there and all that. And then his first thought was he had to go find a big book thumping Al-Anon member that would straighten her out. And I don't know many of those. My daughter's one. My wife is one. And Marie Musset is one. But there are not a hell of a lot of them out there. Juanita down in Santa Fe. But that wasn't going to help him and all that. So I let him kind of run his course and thinking, hell, I don't know what to do. I knew how to get him in touch with some AAs, some big book AAs in Portland. I know a few of those and that, and I gave him a phone number to get him hooked up with that. But I said, that doesn't help your daughter, I don't think. You need something else before that. And while I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure if my mouth is moving or not, it struck me that I sponsor a 28-year sober PhD in psychology who works for the Veterans Hospital in Indianapolis. And I said, write down this guy's name and phone number, and then you call him and ask him how to find help for your daughter. You tell him what it is to go on. And I would never have thought of using Marty for that bad time. That was out of the blue and all that. And it was just one of those things. And you react to it. You make the call. He does. I got a call after we landed here. I was sitting in there eating dinner Friday night. And I got called, and he says, how do you know to do all that stuff? And I didn't. I didn't know that. That was a gift. The inspiration came right then, and it was a surprise. Except it's going to cost me lunch, and Marty gets a hold of me. And I'll be glad to do it. Being still and inexperienced, having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. Didn't you just say that? Interesting. You go back to page 83, and there's a suggestion for a morning meditation there. And it's talking about making amends to our families and what we can do there. And it says, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. I got to tell you, those first few years I was sober, I needed that prayer. And because nobody followed the script. But now the family's gotten a lot broader, a lot bigger, and I don't mean just blood, but it has. So that's a wonderful thing to add to your morning meditation. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we'd be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we'd be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. What are those problems? Anybody reading along with me? What problems are they talking about? I think probably dealing, talking about the problems up there we're having in learning to use our intuition, don't you? Because there are going to be some times you're going to think it's an intuitive stop and really go out and step on yourself if you're not careful and do that. But not many. Just learn to rely on it. We ask for, especially for freedom from self-will, and we're careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. You tried to explain that to the new guy. What do you mean I can't pray for myself? That can be a heated argument if you let it get that way. I think I was on the wrong side of that at one time. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we can tend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. Many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. What I've been doing these last few years. Normal day is get up, and we got this great little table and a little den area, and go back there and sit and go through my plan for the day. And somewhere in there, my wife may already be sitting at the other side of the table, and there may have come in later, and she'll be over there doing her side of the day. We may sit there for 45 minutes and not say a word. She's doing her thing and I'm doing mine. We're just sitting there at the same time. And there are occasions then towards the end of that meditation period where we'll talk about things in the plan for the day that are necessary. And I really don't know what she's meditating about there. I don't know what she's doing. She has a couple of books she looks at sometimes, and she sits and meditates. I don't even look at the books. She puts them in the same basket I do when I get up, but I don't even look at hers and all that. I don't want to get into her stuff. It's worked pretty well these last 20 years or so, but keeping my mouth shut, and 8 times out of 10. But we'll sit there and we'll do that. And I'm liable to go a lot of different places with that. I've tried centering prayer. I've tried all these kind of different things when I'm sitting meditating. And they all worked. And why I left them, I guess I don't know. I guess I felt it was time to move on. A friend of mine who went to seminary to be a priest and decided he wanted to drink and chase women first, so now 40 years sober later and that sort of thing, he's too long and got too much damage behind him. But he gave me a prayer book from one of the Benedictine Abbey down south of us, and that sat in my basket for years, and I never picked it up. And for some reason, I've been kind of using that at this time, it's been fun and it's been enlightening, and I'm not real good about hitting the designated prayer for the day but I try to follow it pretty close and that sort of thing. And I've just done a lot of different things that seem to be working as suggestions for other people. I had a good friend up until a couple of months ago who had 34 years in AA, and he's a priest, a big book priest. Irritated other people when he would talk outside of AA and give a talk, because he'd been a priest for several years when he had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, "You know what? I found God there," and that raised some eyebrows. than they really did. And I occasionally, where I work, I would get somebody on a 12-step call who was trying to be an incredibly anonymous clergyman needing help with his drinking. And he certainly didn't want the word to get back to his congregation. It had to be quiet. And I'm thinking of one younger Southern Baptist man who had driven up from Bloomington, about 40, 50 miles away, and who was just really wanted to stay anonymous. So he says, "Do you know any other clergy?" And I said, "Yeah, I can hook you up with one." And I call Larry, and I says, "What you doing?" He says, "I'm down the street here getting a haircut." "Why?" I says, "You got your collar on?" And he says, "No, why?" I said, "Good. I got a Southern Baptist for you to talk to." He says, "Oh, okay." And so he went down with him. And then, much to my surprise, he brings him back up to my office, and there's an extra room down there where they can go in there and talk. And for some reason, I'm walking by that room, going down the hall there, and I hear Larry telling this priest, "Was, you know, I had all this education and all the Bible education and all that, and I found God in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd have never gotten sober if I'd had the same beliefs after I got here that I did before I got here." And he became a wonderful priest. He didn't change being a priest, and that over the year. And then after he let the Baptist go and moved on, he stuck his nose in the door, wondering if we could have lunch, and he's laughing going down the street. He says, "I kind of feel sorry for those guys." He says, "Those Southern Baptists, alcoholism's a sin." He says, "It's a badge of honor amongst the Catholics." He says, "That's kind of..." But anyway, the prayer meditation helps, and kind of be open to it. But you can lay yourself open to some things you don't want to get when you're asking about prayer. You may run into the dogmatic person who thinks, "Well, my way is the only way." And by this time, you'll have experience that you know it's not. And it doesn't work to argue with that. But it can open you up stuff. But don't be afraid to investigate it and how you want to do it. My average time sitting is about 30 to 45 minutes. It's taken me 45 years to get where I can sit 30 to 45 minutes. If you can sit down, after you've done your morning plan, if you can sit there and learn to sit, I'd say make yourself a goal and turn the timer on over the stove or something and make it 3 minutes. And during that 3 minutes, you can use a mantra, you can just sit and listen. Just try to discard all the vagrant thoughts that come into our head. Don't try to throw them away. They come back faster. Just try to discard and sit there and try to do it for 3 minutes. And then maybe feel like comfortable trying to do that for 3 minutes. And don't expect anything. If you hear a voice at that period of time, you got 45 years on me of not hurting a voice during prayer and meditation. In my case, it hasn't happened. Just don't expect anything. You're just sitting there, and if nothing else, you're just sitting there to honor God that you're sober. Go in there with expectations. I think that's the biggest mistake we make when we're trying to learn to do prayer and meditation. It's hard enough without our expectations. And then maybe after you've been doing this for a while, you'll see changes in your life that you didn't have before when you started to do the 11 step. You may find that you focus better on your job. Generally, what happens is the focus is more towards helping somebody else. It's precisely where it needs to be. And that's just been my experience. I don't carry it with me, but I can't even remember the guy's name. Ran across a Russian Orthodox bishop that wrote some cute little essays on meditation. And none of them are longer than about like that in fairly large print. And he sits down, and he's the one that tells you to try to do it for 3 minutes. And he says, and just try to sit back and discard all the stuff in your head. And yet right there, you got to discard that all these things are going to come into it. One of them might be that you've got to get up and take care of that thing that's been sitting there for 10 years. And you haven't done it yet. Now's not the time to do it either. He tells you not to answer your phone. Just give 3 minutes to God. And all these silly things will come, because I promise you the stupidest thoughts you've ever had are going to show up when you sit down to do it. Your ego is going to work against you. It's so badly on this. It's just fine. Just discard it. Just ignore him. Don't fight him or her. Just a coach.
We got 5 minutes.
We got 5 minutes. Okay.
Talk about step 12. Better hurry. Why? That isn't exactly we relax and take it easy.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it went that long.
It's all right. Went where it was supposed to go.
I'll start step 12 real quick. Most of you don't know what I do, and I manage the central office for Indianapolis Intergroup. And I'm in the middle of 12-step goings-on all day long, every day. We're one of the oldest intergroups in the country and one of the most successful. We have a 12-step list where people call in, and all they give us is they let us know, we'll find out whether it's a male or a female, what zip code they live in, and their phone number. And the only other question we ask them is, are you available for daytime phone calls? We're going to assume you're available for nighttime phone calls. Because it's harder to find somebody to help a drunk if you got one in serious trouble at noon than it is at midnight. And so I'm in the middle of 12-step work like that a lot and going on. And it's out there. We're pretty good at it. Handled through the office between 9 and 4:30, 5 days a week, we average actual 12-step calls where an alcoholic is sent to go see if that person's all right. And they conveyed, the minor ones are ones that guy says, I really need to get to a meeting. So we'll call somebody and say, do you want to take this guy to a meeting? But we'll include that in the 12-step call list as much as we want that the guy that's nearly comatose on the floor and needs to get to the hospital. But we'll handle about 25 of those a month on the average during 8 to 5. The biggest thing as far as I'm concerned is 12-stepping, and Bob and I do the same thing getting new people to work with. We go to other groups. There really is. The biggest form of 12-step call I can do is go to meetings I've not been there before and hang out for a while, just share my experience for a while, and then every once in a while you get to call or somebody. You get to where you can see this person in the room who is in so much pain that they are approachable. And I've got several friends who are sober in their 20s now who I did that and went up to them in the years, and they're very dear friends of mine. And the approach is I can see you're in a horrible amount of pain. I've been in AA a long time, and if you do what I do, I promise you'll get better. And that's all I say. I wish that sales pitch had worked when I was trying to sell shit, but it didn't. So get your name on a list first so you can be helpful to somebody. Step up and do it. My guess is less than half of you in the room got your name on the 12-step list so people can get a hold of you. And I don't want a head count. Don't want to be proved wrong. But I'd like to be proved wrong, but I think. Anyway, our life is to be one of work at this point because we're supposed to be here to help other people. And if we keep running back to meetings because we're not feeling right, you're missing the most important part. You're going to feel right when you got other people involved in your life and you're showing them what happened to get you here. I'm done.
Well, look at that.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. Primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Make sure you got a message. If you're going out there to tell people, keep coming back, keep the plug in the jug, don't drink and you won't get drunk, you haven't said a goddamn thing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having us. This has been a treat. You've all been.
Employers and a vision for you. I'd like to introduce David for Dan.